Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Tide greetings. It is Tuesday, 4 p.m. This is Unfiltered, the 93rd episode, broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Your co-host, Aaron Fitzpatrick, with
Brian DeMarco. Hey, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. You know,
we have a special guest in the studio with us today, Mr. Monty Matthews.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Very excited to be here. It's been way too long for me, so I am was bubbling all day today, waiting to get in here. Showed up an hour and a half early, and now have two pies in front of us and your ham, which is delicious, Monty.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear it. Glad you like it.
So before we introduce Monty and the pigs that he oversees up in the Catskills and Finger Lakes region.
Yeah,
just a quick recap as a... Hadn't seen Brian in a little while, and I know he just came from the Acro Marilyn Condit auction dinner last night, BYOB, which everyone brings something fantastic to the table. And I think I've gone with you for 3 years straight, and this year I missed it. So it was a sad night for me last night, but I'm sure it was just as fabulous as always for you.
Well, I mean, I can recap what we drank, and hopefully not to make you jealous, but oddly enough, we had our company Christmas party, the Gotham Wine Group Christmas party, was... at a restaurant called Elsewhere. And it was odd because, I have two Christmas parties in one night, and one is a big client and one is our own. And when we get there to our own Christmas party, we find out from the owner of the restaurant that he's closing and that this is his last week open. And that I said, oh, wow. So we've spent...
But they haven't been open that long, have they?
Well, no. I mean, actually, the restaurant, one of the owners is Brian Kaiser, who's actually a really great guy. And he's been a very loyal fan to Barter House Wines. And
where is Elsewhere located?
43rd and just west of 9th Avenue, across from the Esca property that Mario Batali has. But, you know, he's more famous for his Casa Lulu restaurant, which is more of like a cheese shop and cheese mecca, and Tia, who's a friend of the show, and she used to work there with those guys. And so that property is more of a jewel box and has done really well, and I think that they just couldn't make a go of it at the newer location called Elsewhere. And in any case, I thought, wow, this is, we're essentially the last party they had. But it was great because it was kind of like a free-for-all. So that was good. And then so I quickly jumped in a cab and went down to Tribeca Grill and sat with some of the usual suspects from the Acker team and a room full of probably 250 people. And so I brought a 1995 Ponce Griot Chambertin. And then one of my old standbys was a Ruchot Chambertin 1988, which I bought a case of at Christie's about a decade ago, and I drink a bottle every year just to see how it's doing.
And how was it doing?
It was doing pretty good. I checked in with it, and it was let me know that it was still got some life, and it was still pretty happy to see me. along the way, though, there was at our table we had three different vintages, all 20 or 30 years older of DeKem. Some in half bottles, some in full bottles. There was a ton of great white Burgundy being poured, and then we had a ton of Rhone wine at our table. And the usual suspects of the 88s and 89s were being just poured, over poured.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot of good fun. A lot of Beaucastel, mm-hmm. a lot of some Clos de Pops, a lot of Chave, some Hermitage. So we really went well. And there's a couple of the guests that have been on this show are actually at our table. So
cool.
They'll go nameless for now, but they know who they are and they know what they drank and they know what we drank together.
So. And they're all feeling brilliant today.
I'm sure they are. I'm moving at a fairly consistent pace, but I wouldn't say I was setting the world on fire here.
So speaking of Christie's, I was reading today that 2011 was a record year for them with $90 million in sales. So I thought that was
no. That's impressive. That's the auction house altogether.
Auction house, yeah,
but mm-hmm. not the wine department.
No, it wasn't the wine department. But I think it was kind of. It wasn't a wine news column that I read, so I right. don't know what the breakdown of that was. But it was still considering, you know, the I don't know tenuous year this has been for a lot of people on the economic financial scale. Well, still surprising in some ways.
We both have friends that you know Robin Kelly O'Connor currently is running that show over at Christie's, and I know that he's trying to do a lot to. You know, make his own mark and bring in some new consigners. But I think, you know, and this is no criticism of Christie's because, I'm a big fan and I've spent a lot of time and energy working with Christie's to do a lot of different things on the wine side. But the wine department obviously is part and parcel a feather in the cap of the fine art department. So the reason they have wine is mostly because one of the owners owns a winery and of Christie's, and two, because it highlights the fact that the people that are consigning furniture and impressionist art also have wine collections.
Yeah,
and so it's really more of like a spoiler on their car than it is more like the engine.
The art groupies hang out with right. the wine groupies.
Right, exactly. But I think this brings us back to like almost the reason we're here today is like we're here for the holidays. We did Goat-tober.
Yep.
We did Turkvember,
sure.
And I know that I don't know if there's an official theme here at Heritage for December. Jack, our producer, is there a theme, Jack?
Goosember.
Goosember. Well,
just came up with that.
I prefer a hammy New Year, if you don't mind.
Oh
Monty,
we'll co-sign strong.
That.
Yeah, okay,
we'll co-sign that.
Right, well, I grew up eating ham on Christmas, so I'm going to side super. With you, Monty. Yeah. Super.
Well, this is perfect because this is our Christmas episode, folks, and mm-hmm. we have not only did I purchase one of these hams for my Christmas, but I was able to rekindle. A friendship with Monty, and we saw him. Where did we see you, sir?
We saw you at Williams-Sonoma. We were at the Artisans Food Fair, which Williams-Sonoma has about once a month. Actually, it is the first Saturday of every month, and we were in the Columbus Circle Square store, and that's where we ran into you.
That's right,
by accident.
That's the Super Mall, if anyone went down the Upper West Side, but. So, before we get into like the deliciousness of your hams, tell us a little bit about how you got started, and I know you're an old ag guy like me, so it's fascinating for a lot of our listeners who are always like, how did you get in this business? So, so Monty, how did you get in this business?
Well, I am an old ag guy, and I worked on a lot of food accounts, and one of the accounts that I worked on very closely, actually started doing the advertising for, was Newman's Own, which was Paul Newman's company. And that company really represented everything I wanted to do in the food business because it gave all his profits to charity.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is to sell an all-natural ham that is really a superior product in every way, nitrate-free, and support family farms in upstate New York where they're really hurting. And what we do is we cure these hams in a traditional hickory smoke method that's been around for 50 years that this one family, the Purdy's of Sherbourne, New York, have been doing. And we've brought that down to Long Island where we make a glaze that I invented a number of years ago. And we put them together and we sell them. And we sell them online at www.montysham.com. And that's where we also are on Guilt Taste, www.guilttaste.com. So we're building our audience, and we are giving, we are helping feed the hungry with every ham we sell. We support food banks here in the city and across the country. As our audience has grown, we become more aware that it's not just a New York focus, but our focus in terms of our product is certainly not New York State locavore eating.
And what year did this company begin?
I just started 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
This is actually our second holiday season.
That's exciting. So this exciting. Has been rapid growth for you.
Well, it's good and steady and solid. Yeah. We've actually sold out of our smaller size completely.
What size is that? How many pounds is that?
Well, that's a 6 to 8 pound boneless ham.
Okay.
But the big boy,
I imagine was what Brian got.
Brian got the big boy. Brian got something that's going to be hard to carry up the stairs. they come in about 13 to 15 pounds, and they're really a gorgeous ham.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
How you mentioned just the overall the stress in terms of the upstate region, and given that the farms were really hard hit from the hurricane, how did that affect any of your producers?
I must be honest with you, we were out of the hurricane zone, out of the that was more over towards Vermont.
Good then for
the Finger Lakes weren't hit as hard, and we're very fortunate. What has been hard hitting is that dairy price supports have just not been there. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to convert dairy farms into hog producing farms, and that's one of the reasons why our ham tastes so different, because our animals are completely grass fed. Mm-hmm. They are pastured, they're never penned, so they're free to roam and to eat alfalfa and clover and all kinds of wonderful things, and live in a very stress-free environment, and as a result we have an incredibly tender product that I'm very proud
of. Now let me ask you, there's always this, you know, pigs eating chestnuts, does that do anything to...
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Iberico ham, for instance, mm-hmm. I mean, the flavor is entirely based on the acorn, mm-hmm. and what it consumes. I would say that our hams with our clover and our grasses, it is very much the same thing. The flavor is very much impacted by that. Mm-hmm. And since we don't use salt, nitrates and nitrites, which are salts, of course we use salt in the curing process, but in terms of nitrates and nitrites, we don't. So as a consequence, your flavor of the original meat is not overwhelmed by those salts. Mm-hmm. Instead, it picks up the hickory undertones of the smoking process.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
That old adage of "you are what you eat" applies to animals as well.
It certainly does, Aaron. That's absolutely a fact.
Mm-hmm. Now, I had the pleasure, I guess, and the luxury of going down to Joel Salatin's farm down in Virginia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we chased his, I saw his agalator, and I went and saw his pig corrals, and they would move the pigs like every, I guess, 30 days. And they would basically decimate the grass and the area that they would, and then they would just move them, and then they would give that chance for that area or that pen to come back to life.
Yes.
And is that the same type of strategy that the upstate farmers are using now, or is that something you're looking for?
Well, it's staggering to tell you that the average pig in its growth cycle requires 2 acres of land.
Per pig,
2 acres, which is quite extraordinary.
Yeah, it is.
And mostly, I would have to say that's not the industry norm, that's our norm, because we have a very large animal. Mm-hmm. Commercially, most pigs are 180 pounds. Ours go to 250. And we have a Landrace Duroc cross of pig, which is a beautiful white big pig. It looks very much like our label, as a matter of fact.
Oh, the label here on the Monte's Ham Original Glaze. Yes.
And also on the ham itself.
Mm.
So that requires a great deal of land, which is one of the reasons why our hams are not inexpensive, mm-hmm. quite honestly. I mean, the less room that a hog takes up, the less you have to charge for it, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. And again, if you're feeding it grains as opposed to grass, that's another way in which...
Right.
What I call supermarket ham differs radically from ours.
No, but for people who are, you know, shopping and they pick up a Smithfield ham or something for Christmas, I mean, are they doing themselves any disservice? I mean, obviously we're talking about a very unique product and it comes at a premium. And, you know, I think most listeners of this show are game for that. They understand that to get that kind of product, you have to pay a bit more. But I'm guessing that, I don't have the figures in front of me, obviously, but we're going to sell, you know, a truckload of ham this holiday season. And, you know, we talked about before the show a little bit about, you know, making a cheap ham taste great is all about the glaze. Mm-hmm. But there is some sort of social consciousness to...
Well, I really appreciate your saying that. I because it's in the middle of the holiday season, I would really not like to get into farm... factory farm practices,
right.
But they're enormously harmful, not only to the environment but to the animals themselves. Mm-hmm. And if you want to look it up, you can by all means look it up. But I don't really want to talk about it to
sure,
you.
That's fine.
I would just like to say that there is an enormous difference between what you're putting in your body and what you're putting in your children's bodies, and if you are concerned at all about antibiotics in foods, and if you're concerned about additives, then your supermarket ham is really something that you should avoid. Mm-hmm. It'll save you a ton of money, but it, there is no comparison, and there is no comparison, quite honestly, to the way the animals are raised.
Well, I mean, and this is not to, obviously, we're talking about Monty's hams today, but what other people are doing it right, do you think? So,
I think there are a lot of producers that are doing a terrific job. Sam Edwards, without any question, is doing a great job.
But also a friend of Heritage Radio.
Yes,
he is.
And a great friend of Patrick. And Patrick Martins, by the way, was the one who put this project together for me, if you will. He introduced me to the Purdy's in Sherburn. And the Purdy's are the ones who bring the ham in from the small family farms. And they're the ones who do the production for me. So Patrick is, you know, instrumental in making a lot of food in this country a lot better than it ever was before.
Well, this is another shout out for the lovely and talented Patrick Martins.
Without whom Monty's Ham would not exist, to be honest with you, because he's the one who put me together with my
suppliers.
And how
did you two cross paths?
Yeah, I just read about him, and he's a very giving person in terms of his time, in terms of contact. I contacted him. I said, I want to do this. Can you point me in the right direction? And,
yeah.
And he did.
That's no, funny. He's a good man.
Uh-huh.
He's a good man. Well, part of, I mean, and I know Aaron is trying to, looking at me like, how are we going to pull this thing around to the wine show?
No, not even. I was going to.
I thought we were going to do some pairings.
We are.
Well, but, yeah, we're going to.
I'm excited about that.
Okay. Well, should we take a break first and then?
Jack, should we take a break? Okay. So, yeah, stay tuned. We're going to take a quick break.
When we get back, we'll
talk a little about what to pair with your holiday ham.
Welcome back to the 93rd episode of Unfiltered. I'm your host, Brian DeMarco, with your co-host here, Aaron.
Hello.
And our special guest today, Mr. Monty Matthews of Monty's Ham. Mm-hmm. So, and also shout out to Jack for a little James Brown Funky Christmas. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Good tie-in, Jack.
Little nice little holiday cheer there. So, as Aaron wails on this pizza here,
I'm eating the ham.
Oh, the ham. So the glaze. Monty, tell me about this glaze. Because the glaze is like, it's on my finger and I'm licking it. So
ridiculous, this glaze.
Tell us what's in the glaze.
Well, the glaze was something, it's really quite simple, except that what I did was initially, the recipe that you can find for this glaze is not the recipe that I put in the jar necessarily, because I added a spice blend that I'm very proud of. It's a very simple glaze, actually. It's organic brown sugar. It's Swiss Seville marmalade, and it's real Dijon mustard, along with a spice blend that I put together We make it in a certified organic kitchen out on the North Fork of Long Island. Yay.
Yeah, I'll toast to that. This is a whole nother part of this
very
conversation.
Very near Aaron, as a matter of fact.
That's right.
Pleased to say.
Uh-huh.
So, and this glaze is not specifically for ham only. You can use it on salmon. You can use it on... you can use it on carrots. You can use it on ribs. The recipes are all on www.montysham. You can go and see what else we can do with this glaze. The glaze.
Is there any orange in here?
There's there's marmalade. Orange marmalade.
That citrus, that little zing in there, really brings it, everything together in terms of the balance.
And you know, every ham I sell with cloves. So you in your house becomes like this wonderful holiday smell.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. It just permeates everything. And the glaze, I have a little joke about the glaze, actually. A guy I was working with wanted to get a kosher for Passover seal on Monty's ham, original glaze, which we thought would be a lot of fun. That hasn't happened yet. But if you are kosher, you can eat the glaze with impunity, I can promise you.
Well, before we talk about the wine pairings, I have to say that it actually goes quite nicely with this Omegang Rare VOS beer that I'm drinking. Yep, and I can imagine that glaze being really good on ribs and also pairing nicely with beer. Just going to throw that one out there.
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal on ribs, I do, if I do say so myself.
Yeah. Well, you don't you, I also noticed on your website, which is what, montysham.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you have other sort of accoutrement that goes with, some goes with ham and others are just things you found in upstate. Or
well, actually, they're all Long Island. The company is based on Long Island because I have a fondness for Long Island. I've lived out there 35 years. So I put together baskets, gift baskets, which are really locally grown items from the North Fork and the South Fork of Long Island that are made in the certified organic kitchen. They're all a taste of the North Fork, so we have a lot of those. That's what you're seeing. And those are just things that I think go really well with ham. Pumpkin pickles, corn relishes, honeys, honey mustards, mm-hmm. all kinds of things that we put together with the ham.
Well, we are popping a little Portuguese Douro red wine.
This is the Studio Red.
This is the Studio Red, which, you know, when we were unleashing this this container of ham, it seemed like a pretty good pairing, just sort of a spontaneous pairing. But
that's gorgeous.
During the break, we were also speaking about Riesling being a very nice accompaniment to
this
ham
Riesling's-
and this glaze.
I think Rieslings are such a nice balance because you have the acid of the Riesling and the sweetness and smokiness of the ham, and together I think they really give you a beautiful mouthfeel, and they're very nicely.
What are some of your favorite New York State Rieslings that you would pair with Monty's ham?
Aaron, you take this. I'm sorry. I use German Rieslings.
Oh, you do?
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Then you and I can have that conversation.
Yeah. No, I like... aside from what's going on out in the North Fork, I'll give Anthony Napa, who's doing a Riesling, I think it's called Luminous, a little shout out.
Well, I'd give a shout out to Roman Wool.
Roman Roth.
Roman Roth.
Absolutely, yep.
Whose Riesling is gorgeous, mm-hmm. by the way.
So, and...
I would say that my friends at Weimer would...
Herman Weimer, yes, absolutely, up in the Finger Lakes. Got to hand it to Constantine Frank time and time again as well for his Rieslings. Cayuga Lake.
I think vineyards. Upstate wines are really underrated, to be honest with you.
Oh, I do too.
I think there's some gorgeous wines from upstate.
We did, with our pal Justin Christoph, a 12-wine tasting of Rieslings blind from the Finger Lakes, and it was a pretty impressive showing. So, but I chose Weimer as my favorite, actually.
Mm-hmm.
There's a handful of producers from the North Fork who are buying grapes from the Finger Lakes and bottling them in the North Fork, but, you know, certainly giving credit to the grapes being from the Finger Lakes, Joe McCary being one of them with his winemaker Kelly, and I think that they're doing a really nice job there. So,
well, wine production on the North Fork and mostly the North Fork has just exploded. Yeah. I mean, I was not aware of this, but until 1976, there was one vineyard, and now we're up to over 50. And that's in that 35-year span, which is pretty amazing.
50? I thought there were 34. Wow.
No, I think we're about 50.
Wow. Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, and...
Still a young industry.
Yeah. And the character of the wines is getting better every year.
Sure.
I realize it's not of international stature, at this point, but I think we're getting there. We have some really nice Pinot Noirs that are coming out of the area, and some, and I do think Roman Ross Riesling is extraordinary.
Well, I think that, you know, the Merlots in the North Fork is something that they've been trying to push as a signature grape of Long Island, and I always felt that the Cabernet Franc was really the more special of the grape, mm-hmm. but maybe not a commercially driven grape, but something that at least is, you know,
original
yeah. and has some sort of place to it.
Absolutely.
But you know, I think that any of these, like these, you know, this Douro Red, for example, like you're getting some obvious fruit up front, but with this ham, you know, there's that wood element to the ham that kind of goes with this,
yeah.
this light bodied red.
It's very nice.
The Merlot, I think, is kind of of the same ilk. Kind of that soft,
right.
Fruity, plummy character. Well, which
a lot of Merlots, can be a little spicy, but they also have the structure. Merlot has been the backbone for a lot of Bordeaux for hundreds of years. So I think that ham and Bordeaux go well, and I think that Merlot from California or even Merlot from the North Fork would mm-hmm. Be perfect for this ham.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Glad you like it.
Thank you. When you started Brick Kiln Kitchens online, I realized you had sort of... Did you roll out with Monte's Ham Glaze prior to developing the hand concept?
No.
Or did they go hand in hand?
Hand in hand. The whole project was from the start. We started with the two projects on the two products, the ham and the glaze. And then I added the cloves as a dimension so that you really were getting the whole kit, if
mm-hmm.
you will.
Mm-hmm.
And we send it out with the recipe card so you can it's really foolproof cooking. It's very easy to do and doesn't require a lot of effort at all. So,
well, let me ask you, where did you get the original recipe for this ham?
Well, this is the true story. I came to New York as a very young writer. I had no money like everyone else who comes to New York. And I went to my first big party, which was the assistant editor to an assistant editor at a beauty magazine. She had this big, gorgeous ham in the middle of the table. People were devouring this ham. And afterwards, I stayed after the party to help her clean up, begging her for the recipe of the ham. And she gave it to me, and it was a really simple principle. She said, you just take a big old ham, and you glaze the hell out of it and cook it for a very long time. And I've been doing
at a low
that.
Temp?
At you know, really moderate temperature,
moderate,
about
like 325.
Oh, okay. Oh no. I want that mahogany glaze on this thing, so I up the heat a little bit more. But it was just, you know, so that's when I really realized that if you wanted to get ahead in New York, you had to have a good watch, decent shoes, and when you had a big party, just make a huge big ham. And that's the genesis of Monte's Ham.
So it's been successful for you?
Hugely successful.
Well, let me see your watch.
There's the watch, and here are the shoes.
See, wow, all right.
What has been one of the more trying obstacles that you've confronted in the last 2 years that maybe you didn't expect?
Well, we've had a lot of things. You know, shipping, for instance, has gone through the roof. It's very expensive to get stuff down from upstate, fuel costs being what they are. Things you can't really predict, I would say. But the acceptance has been tremendous, and that it's very gratifying. When you hear from people after a holiday saying that your ham was the hit of the party, or the woman who reordered this week who said, last year, she and her family were stuck in the 30-inch snowstorm, and they ate ham for days on end because they couldn't get out of the house. And she said, never got tired of it, which I thought was really kind of nice compliment.
Yeah.
I got one from a customer yesterday who had said, your ham was the hit of our party and the centerpiece of our table, and it's been picked away. There's nothing left. And, of course, now she's got the perfect soup bone. So
I just ate a whole clove.
Oh, I'm sorry. That.
No, I love cloves. So for me, this is like brilliant. But
I try to pick them out and get into somebody's throat.
Let me ask you, how long? Like, so I'm going to cook this ham on Christmas Day, likely, or maybe even Christmas Eve. I'm not sure. How long will it last? In Tupperware.
It's a little scary, actually. You know, because the ham is fully cooked. because it's pre-cooked product. I mean, when you get it, you could actually open that bag and just slice the ham off and eat it right away because it's been cooked to 148 degrees. So all you're really doing is trying to raise the temperature up to 148 degrees. So that's all you're really doing is you're reheating it basically.
But with glaze.
With the glaze. Well, that, of course, is the whole shtick. That's the gestalt of Monty's ham is the glaze, really, and that's what makes it very different.
Interesting.
On top of
how much is the glaze on a retail shelf?
Well, the glaze is $12 for 16 ounces,
all right.
And which is a true Williams-Sonoma pricing, in my opinion. And the ham is the ham. When you see that the ham is $180, that's the only size we have left, by the way. That sounds like a lot of money. But mm-hmm. when I go into my supermarket and see boar's head at $7.99 a pound in the deli section, $180 doesn't sound like a lot of money when you do the math on what you're getting a 13 to 15 pound ham.
Right.
Right.
And the glaze and the cloves.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
And the fact that the ham is brilliant.
Well, you compare it to something like prosciutto, compare mm-hmm. it to pancetta, mm-hmm. compare it to mm-hmm. some of the things that we have no qualms about paying $4.99 for 4 ounces of pancetta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think everything in the world is relative.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going into Despaña and getting maybe 6 slices of Iberico ham when it first arrived to the States because I was just waiting for that to happen.
Right.
And it was like $22 for like 6 slices, 5, yeah. 6 slices. And I'm like, all right, well, that's what you get for, you know. Like,
it makes Monty's ham sound like a tremendous bargain
exactly,
to me.
Exactly, yeah.
But, you know, good food costs money.
Exactly.
It costs money
it
to
does.
Produce. If you want things properly done, you can't rush them. I was determined when I started this business not to, and I'll use the word, not to screw anybody, not to try and get some farmer upstate to produce a product that was as cheap as he could make it, not to have my producer struggle to make ends meet when he's smoking the hams. All of those things, in my estimation, are a very important part of food production
all
in this country.
All comes back around, yeah.
And I think that those of us who can afford fine foods, those of us who care about what our children eat, what we give to our families and friends, I think we have to understand that there is a monetary cost involved.
Absolutely.
But there's also an inherent cost. I mean, I think there's a you know, if you actually add up the elements you talked about and the people that it touches, and then actually what you're putting in your body, you're doing yourself a favor. I mean,
absolutely.
In many regards. And, you know, I get into this whole argument with people about, you know, the fast food industry or just the cheap food industry in general. It's easier and cheaper to eat bad.
It certainly is.
And you know, I'm guilty of having, like, you know, Aaron asked me what my guilty pleasure is, and it's like the Filet-O-Fish at McDonald's. and I've been widely chided for that opinion. But if I
never gonna get used to hearing that, by the way.
but if you go off the rails one.
Listen, guilty pleasure, everybody has one, right?
Yeah, right.
That's fine. I mean, yes.
And yeah,
mine
of
is
course. This,
mine is a Philly cheesesteak from the truck outside my apartment building that costs $5.
I would take that any day over a Filet-O-Fish from McDonald's. That's all I got to say.
Cheesesteak.
Yeah, you're talking to a PA boy right here.
That's it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Is that with or without whiz?
Whiz.
Wit. Whiz.
Oh. Wit.
Jeez. Wit. Whiz. All right, great. That's awesome. Well, you know, it's been great having you
on.
Yeah,
Monty, thank
you. It's terrific talking to you guys, and I wish you all the success in the world with your program. And I'm sorry we're sold out of the small size, but if anybody wants a big, beautiful ham for New Year's.
Yeah, a big beauty.
Please.
So can they, wait, if they order today, can they make the shipping for Christmas?
If they literally walk over to their computer and order this very minute, yes, they can make it for Christmas. But it would be to their great advantage to know that they could have it for
New Year's.
New Year's.
And right,
this is called the Hammy New Year. So
right.
let's roll that into play.
Roll that in. So, yeah. So happy Hammy New Year, everyone.
Hammy New Year to you, too.
Yep. All right.
All right. This is it.
This is it before 2012. Thanks for listening. And
Merry Christmas.
Off.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Yep.
Take care.
Ciao.
We'll be right back.
thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.